Radio Buddhist Youth Association. Good afternoon, everyone. You're listening to the sound of universal compassion. Today we will continue listening to Tenzin's previous program with the book Way of Life by Shanti Davies. Please enjoy.
This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3 or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271-3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering. Hello and welcome once more to the program. In one of the earlier verses of the chapter of Shanti Davis' Guide to the Bodhisattva's Way of Life that we are following, that's chapter 8 on meditation, the author writes, "Whatever joy there is in this world all comes from desiring others to be happy, and whatever suffering there is in this world all comes from one desiring oneself to be happy." This may be the theme to this chapter, and in our last few programs, Shantideva has shown us why it's vital that we change the self-cherishing attitude we're born with for an attitude that cherishes others more than ourselves. The self-cherishing attitude leads us to commit all sorts of harmful actions, both to ourselves and others, which will result in unhappy rebirths. In contrast, purely cherishing others will result not only in their happiness, but also our own. And the more we can develop the mind that cares for others, the closer we come to attaining a state beyond all suffering, arhatship or even Buddhahood. In the next part of the text, Shantideva describes a practice that is not found anywhere else, a kind of role play in which a single meditator takes all the roles. Remember that although this chapter is titled Meditation, it isn't a manual on how to meditate, but rather instructions on how to meditate on a particular subject. That's exchanging this attitude of self-cherishing for the overriding intention to cherish others. In these role plays, Shantideva does just that, exchanging himself as a self-absorbed Shantideva, having no concern for others, with the person on the receiving end of an interaction with this person. In this way, he makes himself experience both sides of the story. This induces intense dislike of the behavior of the self-absorbed individual. However, now before we get on to the role play, which on first reading may appear a little confusing, let's develop a pure motivation for taking part in the program today. Seeing as we're talking about exchanging self for others, let our motivation be that this program becomes the cause for us to make that exchange, so that we can best benefit all other living beings, even up to leading them to Buddhahood. Thank you. And now back to the role-playing Shantideva. He writes, "Considering lesser beings and so forth as myself, and considering myself as the other, in the following way I should meditate upon envy, competitiveness, and self-importance, with a mind free of distorted conceptions." Shantideva is saying that he's going to take various roles to really experience what it's like both to feel envy, competitiveness, and self-importance, and what it's like to be on the receiving end of someone afflicted by those qualities. We are to follow suit. His Holiness the Dalai Lama describes what is about to happen like this. "Here, we begin by evaluating our own good and bad qualities, and on that basis, comparing ourselves with others, distinguishing between those who are equal to us, those who are superior, and those who are inferior. To do this, we make a distinction between our new good side, which has seen what is wrong with considering ourselves more important than others, and the benefits of regarding others as more important than ourselves, and our bad, old side, the egotistical I. The new I now identifies itself with other beings and takes their side. The old I has three aspects, superior, equal, and inferior. And the new I, which is now identified with others, has these three aspects as well. We shall use these two distinct I's to develop successively a sense of jealousy, competition, and pride. Did you get that? If it's a bit confusing, perhaps Pema Chodron's commentary will clarify. She writes, Shantideva begins with an overview of the practice. He asks us to exchange places with others, lower, higher, and equal, and without another thought, experience their afflictive emotions. He encourages us to intensify these emotions and experience their energy directly, using them as our vehicle for awakening insight and compassion. In verse 144, and that's the next verse, we begin by identifying with someone we might consider lower, such as a homeless person. As a mind training practice, he asks us to imagine ourselves in this person's place. This serves two purposes. First, you intentionally experience an emotion we all normally avoid, the envy that someone with nothing could easily feel. Imagine a well-off person passing by and condescendingly handing you down a few coins. See this fortunate person, clean and well-clothed, maybe chatting with friends and going into a restaurant or movie, and don't hold back. Get in touch with your envy. Exaggerate it with your thoughts and allow it to escalate, just as Shantideva does. Feel its intensity, seductiveness, obsessiveness, and pain. That's the first purpose of this practice. The second purpose is to experience being on the receiving end of such intense emotion. This is a radical thing to do. Normally, we see things exclusively from our own perspectives. Reflecting on the other person's experience is a far more expansive and compassionate stance and a straightforward, practical way to awaken bodhicitta. In the next few verses, Shantideva sets up dialogues between people, lower, higher, and equal, and has some fun playing all the parts. It may seem in these verses that he's interacting with others, but he's just describing himself from various vantage points. And that's what Pema Chodron says. Then Shantideva goes on, He is honored, but I am not. I have not found wealth such as he. He's praised, but I'm despised. He's happy, but I suffer. I have to do all the work, while he remains comfortably at rest. He's renowned as great in this world, but I as inferior, with no good qualities at all. His Holiness says that identifying with a new I, the one that realizes the disadvantages of self-cherishing, we put ourselves in the place of inferior people who look at the old egotistical I with lots of jealousy. So the he in the verse in these verses is the old I, and the I in the verses is the new I. He is honored, but I am not. I have not found such wealth as he. He is praised, but I am despised. He is happy, but I suffer. I have to do all the work, while he remains comfortably at rest. He is renowned as great in this world, but I as inferior, with no good qualities at all. Now remember in her commentary, Pema Chodron talks about identifying oneself as a homeless person. So this is like a homeless person watching the well-off Shantideva, or our own egotistical I, walk by and generating envy and aversion. Another comprehensive and vivid commentary on these verses comes from Kunzang Peldon in his book Nectar of Manjushri's Speech. He writes, You must now systematically generate the antidotes to pride, rivalry, and jealousy. The reason for doing this is that as soon as even the slightest virtue appears in the mind stream, these three defilements follow in its wake. They're like demons that sap one's integrity, which explains the importance given to their antidotes. Now, of all the eight worldly concerns, honor, possessions, adulation, and happiness are the things that make you proud. So, perform the exchange, placing yourself in the position of someone contemptible, someone despised, a beggar or tramp. Imagine that you become the poor person and that the poor person becomes you. Now allow yourself to feel that person's envy. Looking up at your former self, your ego now regarded as someone else, someone talented, think how happy you must be, praised and respected by all and sundry. You, on the other hand, are nothing, nobody, a complete down and out, despised and utterly miserable. The person you are looking at is rich, has plenty to eat, clothes to wear, money to spend, while you have nothing. He is respected for being learned, talented, well-disciplined. You, on the other hand, are dismissed as a fool. He enjoys wealth of every comfort and happiness. You, by contrast, are a pauper, your mind weighed down with worries, your body racked with disease, suffering, and the discomforts of heat and cold. You have to work like a slave, digging, harvesting grass, while he can just sit back with nothing to do. As these thoughts pass through your mind, feel your envy. He even has servants and a private horse, both on whom he inflicts a great deal of discomfort and suffering. He's not even aware that they are in distress, and there he is, oh, so comfortable. And as if that wasn't enough, he gets angry and lashes out, whipping and beating them. Put yourself in the position of his poor victims and take their suffering onto yourself. If you manage to do this, it is said you will come to recognize their sorrows. Compassion for them will grow, and you will stop hurting them. Now, just read on their own, Shantideva's verses with their role swapping might be a bit confusing, but I hope these commentaries are giving you the gist of what Shantideva is doing here. He continues in the next verse, "But what do you mean I have no good qualities? I have all good qualities. Compared to many, he is inferior, and compared to many, I am high." Pema Chodron comments, "Building ourselves up is part of the envy syndrome, and when not feeling victimized, we become haughty." However, Kunzang Peldon's explanation is more comprehensive. He writes, "Once again, reflect that he is talented and belongs to a good family. He is wealthy and surrounded by friends. You, on the other hand, are a complete nobody, well known to be good at nothing. But even though you have nothing to show for yourself, you might well ask him what reason he had for being so arrogant. After all, the existence or non-existence of good qualities and the concepts of high and low are all relative. There are no absolute values. Even people who are low down like you can be found to have something good about them, relatively speaking. Compared with someone with even greater talent, he's not so great. Compared with someone even more disfavored, feeble with age, lame, blind, and so forth, you are much better off. After all, you can still walk on your own two feet. You can still see with your own eyes, and you're not crippled yet with age. You have at least something." This verse, which begins, "But what do you mean I have no good qualities?" could be understood in a different sense. Namely, that you have it in you to acquire all the excellence of training, since you have all the qualities of the utterly pure Tathagata Gaba, the essence of Buddhahood, implicit in your nature. Thus you are far from being bereft of good qualities. His Holiness also says that the notions of superiority and inferiority are only relative. In other words, you cannot be superior if there's no person inferior to you. Similarly, an inferior person only comes about because another is judged superior. And so I can just hear His Holiness's characteristic chuckle as he says, "We tell the old I, you are only superior because I'm inferior. So if you want to stay superior, you'll have to put up with me until I attain enlightenment." His Holiness has often pointed out in his teachings that in everyone there's the seed of compassion, even if it is only a seed, and that it can be nurtured. Similarly, we all have the potential to become a Buddha. So nobody can be said to be completely devoid of good qualities. However, the reason our goodness may appear so minimal is not because we are essentially bad, but, as Shantideva points out in his next verse, due to our afflictions. "The deteriorated state of my morals and views is not due to me, but due to my disturbing conceptions. In whatever way he is able, he should heal me. Willingly, I shall accept any discomfort involved. But I am not being healed by him. So why does he belittle me? What use are his good qualities to me? Although he has good qualities, he does not benefit me. With no compassion for the beings who dwell in the poisonous mouth of evil realms, externally, he is proud of his good qualities and wishes to put down the wise." Kunzen Peldon glosses these verses like this. If he retorts that you are despicable because your discipline and understanding are a disgrace, or because you have no resources and so forth, this is not because you are either evil in yourself or simply inept. It's because your afflictions of desire arrogance, avarice, and so on are so powerful that you are helpless. And so you should retort, saying, "All right, if you're such a great and wonderful bodhisattva, you should help me as much as you can. You should encourage and remedy the poor condition of my disciplined view and resources. If you do help me, I'm even prepared to accept punishment from you, harsh words and beating. Just like a child at school learning to read and write who has to take a beating from a teacher. But the fact is that you, the great bodhisattva, are doing nothing for me. You don't even give me a scrap of food or something to drink. So why are you passing yourself off as someone so great? You have no right to look down on me, no right to behave so scornfully to me and people like me. And anyway, even if you did have genuine virtues, if you can't give me any relief or help, what use are they to me? They're totally irrelevant. After all, if you are a bodhisattva but can stand by without the slightest intention of helping or saving me and those like me, who through the power of evil karma are on our way to the lower realms, like falling into the mouth of a ferocious beast, if you have no compassion, you are yourself guilty of something completely unspeakable. And not only do you not acknowledge this, but you are all the time passing yourself off as someone wonderful. The fact is, however, that you have no qualities at all. In your arrogance, you want to put yourself on the same level as the real bodhisattvas, those beings who are truly skilled and who in their compassion really do carry the burdens of others. Your behavior is totally outrageous. This is how to meditate on envy and resentment as the chief antidote to pride. By appreciating the suffering involved in being a poor and insignificant person without talents or honor, you come to realize how wrong it is to be arrogant and scornful. It dawns on you how unpleasant it is for people in humble position when you are proud and supercilious towards them. You should stop behaving like this and begin to treat people with respect, providing them with sustenance and clothing, and working to help them in practical ways. Pema Chodron's commentary says something similar. When a beggar looks at someone like me, someone who's taken the bodhisattva's vow and should not be so unfeeling, he must wonder why I have no empathy. Why don't I do something to help his predicament? It must be like that when you live on the streets. Middle-class people with all their ideas about helping others scoot by without even noticing you're there. Imagining yourself in this position changes the way you see those less fortunate. Just like me, this person would appreciate some understanding and kindness. And that ends the section on putting ourselves in the experience of what Pema Chodron calls the poverty mind. In other words, people who are inferior to us. In the next section, we take the side of those equal to us and foster a sense of competition with what His Holiness calls the old I, the egotistical one. Of course, a sense of competition means that we try to get better of our rival in every way we can, not caring if we make him or her suffer. And this type of behavior is common amongst those trying to get ahead in the commercial world and leads to immoral behavior. It doesn't mean the friendly competition that the recruitment firm Office Team's executive director Robert Hoskin describes as healthy if it inspires great individual and team performance. On their website, Office Team semi-humorously identify five types of workplace competitors who stir up unhealthy competition. The pole vaulter, who nabs all of the high-profile assignments. The boxer, who has a jab for everyone, like a snide remark in a staff meeting or a sarcastic email. The sprinter, who tries to curry favor by the speed of his or her work, even if the results are sloppy. The gymnast, who bends and twists facts, sometimes taking credit for others' work. And the marathoner, who can go the full distance when it comes to spending time at the water cooler, sharing rumors with anyone who will listen. But I guess such behavior is not only confined to the workplace, and Shantideva talks about other behaviors that characterize the unhealthy competition. In order that I may excel he who is regarded as equal with me, I shall definitely strive to attain material gain and honor myself, even by such means as verbal dispute. By all means, I shall make clear to the entire world all the good qualities I have, but I shall not let anyone hear of any good qualities he may have. Also, I shall hide all my faults. I will be venerated, but not he. I will find a great deal of material gain. I will be honored, but he shall not. For a long time, I shall look with pleasure at his being made inferior. He will become the laughingstock of all, regarded among everyone as an object of scorn and derision. Now, although both His Holiness recommends we swap the old eye and the new eye, and Pema Chodron talks about Shantideva swapping himself with a competitor, Kunzan Peldon writes that we ourselves should exchange places with someone similar to us, someone with whom we feel competitive. Tell yourself that however good he is in terms of reputation and wealth, you will do better. Whatever possessions he has and whatever respect he has in other people's eyes, you will deprive him of them. Whether in religious disputation or even by fighting, you will make sure you will get them all for yourself. In every way possible, you will advertise far and wide your own spiritual and material gifts while hushing up whatever talents he has, so that no one will ever see or hear about them. At the same time, you will cover up whatever faults you have, hiding them from the public gaze, while gossiping about all the good shortcomings of your rival, making quite sure that everyone knows about them. Under the impression that you are beyond reproach, lots of people will congratulate you, while for him it will be just the opposite. From now on, you will be the wealthy one, the center of attention. For him, there will be nothing. For a long time, and with intense satisfaction, you will gloat over the penalties he will have to suffer for breaking his vows of religion or because he has misbehaved in worldly life. You will make him an object of scorn and derision, and in public gatherings, you will make him despicable in the eyes of others, digging out and exposing all his secret sins. By using the spirit of rivalry in this way as an antidote to jealousy, you will come to recognize your own faults in being competitive with others. Then you will stop behaving like this and instead do whatever you can to help your rivals with presents and honors. Finally, Shantideva changes places with someone who sneers at him from a position of superiority. He allows himself to experience both the arrogance and the effects of it. He encourages us to do the same, and Pema Chodron even says we should create our own role plays and use our own words to make the whole thing as real as possible. Shantideva writes, "It is said that this deluded one is trying to compete with me, but how can he be equal with me in learning, intelligence, form, class, or wealth? Thus, upon hearing of my good qualities that have been made well known to all, I shall thoroughly enjoy the satisfaction of the pleasant tingling sensation that occurs. Even though he has some possessions, if he's working for me, I shall give him just enough to live on, and by force I'll take the rest. His happiness and comfort will decline, and I shall always cause him harm. For hundreds of times in this cycle of rebirth, he has caused harm to me." Again, Kunzan Peldon comments, "Now imagine yourself in the position of someone who is better off, who looks down on you with pride and derision. And from this vantage point, think that it has come to your notice that he, this tiresome non-entity, is trying to put himself on a par with you. But what comparison could anyone possibly make between you and him, whether in learning or intelligence, in good looks, social class, wealth or possessions? The whole idea is absurd. It's like comparing the earth and the sky. Hearing everyone talking about your talents, about all your learning and so on, saying how it sets you apart from such an abject individual, all this is extremely gratifying. The thrill of it is so intense that your skin is covered with goose pimples. You should really enjoy the feeling. If through his own hard work, and despite the obstacles he has to contend with, he manages to make some headway, you agree that so long as he abases himself and works subserviently according to your instructions, this low-down wretch will get no more than the merest necessities in return: food to fill his stomach, and enough clothes on his back to keep out the wind. But as for any extras, you, being the stronger, will confiscate them and deprive him of them. Every kind of pleasure that this inferior might have, you will undermine, and in addition, you will constantly attack him, piling on all kinds of unpleasantness. But why are you being so vicious? because of all the many hundreds of times that this person, your own ego, has harmed you while you were wandering in samsara. Or again, this verse could be explained as meaning that you will wear away the satisfaction of the self-cherishing mentality and constantly undermine it, because the self-centered attitude has brought you suffering so many hundreds of times in the hells and other places of samsara. This is how Shantideva shows the fault of not being rid of pride. In this way, use this meditation on pride as the principal antidote to jealous resentment. When people who are superior to you behave proudly and insult you with their overweening attitude, you will think to yourself, why are these people being so arrogant and offensive? But instead of being envious and resentful, change places with them. Using the meditation on pride, place yourself in the position of superiority and ask yourself whether you have the same feelings of pride and condescension. And if you find that you are proud and condescending and have scorn and contempt for those lower down than yourself, you will be able to look at those who are now behaving arrogantly towards you and think, well, yes, I can see why they feel the way they do. And you will serve them respectfully, avoiding attitudes of rivalry and contention. Let's say I'm a homeless person and there's Pema walking by with all her good fortune, writes Pema Chodron in her commentary. What if she treated me as a human being instead of just giving me money? What if she asked how I was doing or where I was going to sleep that night? In a relationship between two equal human beings, both the unfortunate person's resentment and Pema's indifference have a chance to melt away. And His Holiness says that putting ourselves in the place of others is very helpful in seeing the egotistical eye and becoming wholly disgusted with it. We imagine that eye as very good-looking, well-dressed, wealthy and powerful, and ourselves as an impartial observer in a crowd of paupers. That eye has never thought of others, only of himself. His Holiness writes, to further his own interests, he has enslaved others and has not hesitated to kill, steal, lie, slander, and selfishly indulge in sex. He's been nothing but a burden on others' lives. When we look at the egotistical eye in this way, true disgust will well up in our hearts. And as we identify ourselves with these other beings in all their misery, we will feel closer to them, and the wish to help them will grow. So there's something to think about and practice over the coming week. Perhaps when passing a beggar in the street, we can pause and really try to feel what it must be like to be that person, really putting ourselves in their place. We can imagine how this beggar sees us. Would he or she see someone with understanding and empathy, or someone that only gives a little money because of social convention? It might be quite a revelation. And now time is up and we must say goodbye. Thank you for joining the program today, and I hope you'll do so again next week. Please dedicate any positive potential from the program to the enlightenment of all beings. Thank you, and goodbye. This show is brought to you by the Buddhist Youth Association every Sunday, bringing Buddhism to the community of the Waikato. We also give away a range of free English or Chinese Buddhism books, MP3, or tapes on Buddhism. If you'd like one, please send a letter with $3 worth of stamps in an envelope to P.O. Box 82146, Highland Park, Howick, Auckland. Or you can phone 09271 3377. Buddhist Youth Association. Respectful, beneficial, empowering.